You're tuned to Focus on Campus, a weekly show which highlights faculty, staff, and students here at the University of Texas at El Paso. Good morning, I'm Louis Sines, your host for Focus on Campus, and a couple weeks ago, we had John White with us, gardening curator for the Chihuahuan Desert Gardens, and he was talking a little bit about how to choose a poinsettia plant, Christmas cactus, and also how to choose a good Christmas tree. And now he's here to tell us a little bit about what to do now that perhaps, you know, all the presents are gone and you may still have that Christmas tree inside, or if you have a living Christmas tree, about how to transplant it. And he's going to share with that all that information with us today. John, thank you so much for being with us here today.
You're welcome. Thank you, Louis.
Now, as we were discussing a couple of weeks ago about Christmas trees, and you mentioned, first of all, the last thing that we shared was people who sometimes wait till the 24th to go get their Christmas trees, they may not get the best pickings. At what point do they need to get rid of that tree? Some people like to leave the tree up all the way up till January 6th, the Three Kings Day, but sometimes they can also pose a fire danger, fire threat, especially if it's getting dry.
Right. As you mentioned, that's probably the biggest worry, is it just getting too dry. Most of the lights and stuff now are pretty safe, but you just don't want to take the chance. But if it's dry and dropping a lot of needles and stuff, then, you know, you probably need to make the decision to take it outside or put something underneath it and catch the needles. But that tree's pretty much gone at that point. And so whether you want to keep it till, would you say, 6th or 8th of January, that kind of depends on how well the tree is holding up, because it may tell you that it's through, you know, it starts dropping so many needles that it's a problem. But again, light quality is important, and then keeping that water changed in the reservoir so that it's always getting fresh water, and you're trying to keep those pores open where they're picking up water. So again, if it ever runs out of water, those pores will close up, and then when you put water in it, it won't pick it up anymore.
And what about as far as getting rid of the tree? I know that the city has a program where they'll pick up Christmas trees, or else you can drop them off at a certain place. What do you recommend for people to do with it? And some of them want to use it as mulch, and some also as firewood. And is that safe?
It is safe. I mean, the firewood you get down, cut all the branches off and keep the main trunk, which is thicker and works for fire for fuel wood. But some of the smaller branches might be good kindling, you know, to work with the fire, but you do want to cure the wood first so you don't use it automatically, you know, straight to the fireplace. You need to let it cure and dry a little bit. A lot of your pines do have a lot of resin associated with it, so when you burn it, you do get a buildup of some of the resin residue, so to speak, inside of, you know, chimneys or whatever fireplaces that you might be using it. So if you burn a lot of pine wood, you're going to need to have chimney sweeper cleaner come in and probably clean the chimney every so often just to take all that residue off, because that can pose a fire hazard. But a lot of people do take the trees to the city yards, and they will have information out as far as different spots within the city that you can take them to. And the city does grind them down, and city will use them as mulch, or people can pick up some of the materials of mulch. There are small mulching machines and stuff that are sold or can be rented, and you can grind your own tree down and use your own mulch that way. If you do happen to have a living Christmas tree, one that actually alive in the pot, if you've had it in the house for a while, it's probably acclimated to the warmer temperature. So if you go outside with it, you want to get it acclimated to cold. So you take it out, leave it out for a little while, bring it back in, take it out, you know, do that kind of thing for 2 or 3 days to get the tree a little bit more acclimated to the cold weather. And then go ahead and plant it out in the yard, depending on the species of the tree. You know what the mature size is. So, you know, you got this tree that's 3 or 4 feet tall, and you kind of sizing it up next to the house, so I'm going to plant it 3 feet away from the house, which makes it look that it's proportionally in there. But then you got to remember, this tree is going to be 50 feet tall. It's going to have a, you know, trunk that's going to be 24 or 30 inches. And so you got to make sure that you plant the tree 15 feet away from the house rather than 3 feet away.
And is there a particular side of the house that you should plant a pine
now,
tree?
No, the pines, you know, if it's a pine that's not more native to the southwestern area, like a noble fir, if you can find it growing in a pot or something, that's not native to the area. It doesn't like the heat. So it would really suffer. So if you were going to try it at all, you would put that on the north side of the house so it stays cooler and more shade and, you know, a little bit more protected. But, you know, Afghan pine, some of those, pinon pine that are sold as living Christmas trees, those can be used in the home landscape, or it could be donated to a school or parks department, whatever. Those can be planted out, and those will actually make a tree that will survive in our climate.
Nat King Cole has kind of introduced us, I guess, to Christmas nuts being the chestnut. But here we have pecans and also pinons, and I'm glad you mentioned that. First of all, let's talk a little bit about pinons, because a lot of people like to go out when they, perhaps when they went out to get the Christmas tree and cut it down, they like to pick those nuts. But that, like the pecan, doesn't produce every year, correct?
Right. People think we are out of the drought, but we're not. We're still in the drought. And so a lot of our pinons that are grown out in the wild, and, you know, people go out and harvest pinon nuts out of the wild, is a lot of our pinons produce what we call pops, where they're hollow or empty. So you may pull a cone off, and the pinon, which is the seed of the pine tree, you open up the cone and you look down in towards the center of the cone, and you'll find a seed stuck down in there. And so when the cone opens up and, you know, dries and opens up, those little pieces that make up the cone separate enough that the seed that's down in there falls out, or a bird can pick it out, different things like that. But that's how they propagate themselves, and that's how people collect the pinons, is you wait for that pinon to begin to dry and start to open the cone up, and the nuts will fall out. So you can collect them a little bit early. You want to see them where they're beginning to expand and open. And you can collect the cones and put them in a bag or something, and as they dry, they'll begin to open more, and you can collect the pinons out of it. But again, you can run into a lot of pops. So a lot of times buying them from somebody on the roadside that's selling pinons, at least you know you're getting pinons that have the nut in them. Whereas you go out, you can spend a lot of time out in the wild and maybe not get that much actually in good production.
As far as pecans, for a while there, we used to be a pretty big pecan harvesting area.
We're still big. I mean, if you throw in the Las Cruces, Doniana County, El Paso County area, we're still, you know, one of the largest pecan condensed growing areas. We don't have native pecans because we don't have those 30-inch rainfalls. So we have to take care of our trees by irrigation. So ours are improved varieties that are managed orchards. But we have the largest concentration of acreage of managed pecans anywhere in the country.
And when you go in, well, a lot of people pick those pecans falling off the tree. Sometimes they'll shake the tree. But if they were to buy them at the store or get them from somebody, how can they tell? Because sometimes when you're cracking those nuts, I don't know if they call them pops like the other one you said, but you'll open it up and the meat will be just very dry or not
even. Hopefully, if you're buying them at the store, those pecans have already gone through a cleaning process, where they have what they call an air leg, and they also have a float part. So the pecans are kind of washed and cleaned, so to speak, fairly good. So a lot of the hollow ones will float off and go out with the debris, and the air legs have a certain pressure of air blowing through them, and the light ones will blow right out of the line. So hopefully you're getting pecans that do have the actual edible kernel or nut inside them. And if you're getting them off the tree, your own tree, depending on how you've cared for the tree, if you've kept it a little bit on the dry side, you're probably going to have more pops.
Can you tell anything by looking at the color of the shell?
Well, one, if the shuck on the outside is hard to pull off, more than likely that nut is not developed correctly, And so it's not even worth your time trying to pull the shuck off. Just throw that pecan away. And when you're picking up pecans off the ground, you can sometimes feel a light one or a heavy one. You know, the heavy ones, of course, have more meat in them, but you will run across, you know, maybe 10% pops. You know, that's kind of about average, 5 to 10%. So you will run across pops, and pops can be due to poor pollination, can be due to drought, can be due to insect problems. So there's a lot of factors, but you should have a good amount of edible pecans come off a tree if you've done your adequate watering throughout the year.
You mentioned earlier about mulch from Christmas trees. Some people use the shells from the pecans. Can you use that?
Yeah, the shells are fine. You used to be able, you could buy the pecan shells from the cracker. You know, some of these big companies that do commercial pecan cracking used to be able to buy the cracked shells, and you'll be able to use those for mulch. But that resource is found to be somewhat valuable, and it's hard to find now. You have to pay bucks to get them. And so the pecan shell is a little bit harder to find. But if you have your own tree and you do your own cracking, those shells can be thrown out. The shell itself is real dense, and it'll take a long time for it to break down. So it's going to stay as a mulch on the surface for a long time. Whereas something that's not as dense, thinner, walled, you know, breaks down quicker. And so it won't last as long. But pecan shells make a very good mulch because they last for a long time. They do have some sharp edges on them, so you have to be careful about walking across them because they will, especially composite soles, they'll catch to the bottom of your shoe and you'll track them around and stuff. So you want to be careful with that.
As we discussed earlier, this has been kind of a wild year weather-wise. Summer was perhaps a little hotter, and then we were still having winds late in May. So what would you recommend for people if they want to know what to do as far as what may be left of their garden, winter plants, or is there anything special that they need to do?
Right now we're kind of in a between season where you've may have planted a fall garden and it's, you know, maturing off. You've been harvesting off of it. If you've, you know, maybe thrown some plastic or tarps over it, you know, kind of keep it going a little bit longer. You can kind of keep it going. But if it truly is finished off, you can take some of that leaf material, put it in your compost pile, grind it down. You can turn it into the ground. The finer you break it down, the faster it's going to break down. So you can break that down. Good time to add organic matter to the soil. Work it in good, and it'll have a chance to, with water, you know, to break down over the season, be ready for you in the spring. Some of our early root crops, carrots, beets, radishes, all those kind of things, can actually be started out in pretty early spring. So you'd be talking about January, February, that you can get started with some of your root crops. So they will give you a kind of an early start on the season, so you can get those planted, then come in with your leafy greens, you know, some of the lettuces, spinach, things like that, that will give you the leafy green, and then you'll have your root crops, your leafy greens.
We mentioned at the beginning of the interview that, of course, you're the garden curator for the Chihuahuan Desert Gardens, and we've been talking about some of the plants that are holiday plants and talking also about the nuts, the pecans, and the pinons. And we may have piqued someone's interest as far as the garden, and the garden has regular hours and people can just come and tour.
Right. Our garden, we always say, is pretty much open 365 days a year, 24/7. You know, people want to come by and see the garden on a weekend, they can come to campus and stroll through the garden. You know, the plants, we are in process of putting signs up on some of the plants to kind of help you know what some of the different plants are. And so I encourage people to come through the garden different times of the year because the plants change. So, you know, the prettiest time of year is probably, you know, about the time of the plant sale, late March, April, and probably early part of May. And then as the heat comes in, everything kind of slows down. And
like us.
Right, yeah, like a, and then when it cools you know, starts cooling again, we can start getting some rain, then things perk up again, like us.
Well, John, thank you so much for taking the time to be with us here today. We've been visiting with John White, gardening curator for the Chihuahuan Desert Gardens. Focus on Campus is taped and produced in the KTEP Studios, University of Texas at El Paso Communication Building. Our thanks to our engineer, Lauren Terrazas. Our producer is Dennis Wu. You've been tuned to Focus on Campus. I'm Louis Sines.